Chapter 3. And I'll tell you why I was sober and thoughtful. It was because I recognised that this, as they say in the stories, was not an end, but a beginning. I mean to say, it was all very well to have fallen in love at first sight, but that didn't take me very far. Where, I was asking myself, did I go from there? What of the future? In other words, what steps was I to take in order to bring about the happy finish? The fact had to be faced that if banns were ever to be put up, and clergymen were ever to say, "Wilt thou, Reginald?" some pretty heavy work lay ahead of me. In no sense could the thing be looked upon as a walkover. You see, I've kept it from you till now, but there are certain defects in my personal appearance which prevent me being everybody's money where the opposite sex is concerned. I'm no flyer in the way of looks. Externally, I take after the pater, and if you've ever seen the pater, you'd realise what that means. He was a gallant soldier and played a hot game of polo, but he had a face like a gorilla, much more so, indeed, than most gorillas have, and was, so I'm informed, affectionately known to his little circle of cronies as Consul the Almost Human. And I am his living image. These things weigh with girls. They shrink from linking their lot with a fellow whose appearance gives the impression that at any moment he may shin up trees and start throwing coconuts. However, it was too late to do anything about that now. I could only hope that April-June would prove to be one of those rare spirits who can pierce the outer husk, as it were, and penetrate to the soul beneath, because I haven't got such a bad soul as souls go. I don't say it's the sort of soul you'd write to the papers about, but it's well up to the average. And I'm bound to say that as the days went along, I found myself perking up a bit. I seemed to be making progress. No one could have been matier than April during my first week in Hollywood. We motored together, bathed together, and had long talks together in the scented dusk. She told me all about her ideals, and I told her all about the old homestead at Biddleford, and how countesses were presented at court and had the run of the royal enclosure at Ascot and a lot of other things she seemed interested in. And there was absolutely nothing in her manner to suggest that she was in any way repelled by the fact that I looked as if I belonged in Whipsnade. In fact, to cut a long story short, her chummy attitude so encouraged me that by the end of the first week I decided to chance my arm and have at it. The occasion I selected for pressing the button and setting the machinery in motion was a party she was giving at her house on Linden Drive. She explained that she didn't like parties, as they seemed to her hollow, but that a girl in her position was expected to give one every now and then, particularly if she'd been away for a while. It was to be one of those jolly Beverly Hills outdoor dinner parties where you help yourself at the buffet, squash in anywhere, and top off the meal by diving into the swimming pool. The proceedings were about to begin somewhere after 9 and before 10, so I rolled up at about 9:45. This, as it turned out, was on the early side. A few scattered couples had arrived and were strolling about under the coloured lanterns, but April was still dressing and the orchestra hadn't started to play, and altogether it was apparent that there was going to be a bit of a lull before the revelry got into high. In these cirques, it seemed to me that the best way of passing the time would be to trickle over to the table where the drinks were and brace myself with one or two. In view of what lay before me, I wanted to feel at the top of my form, which I wasn't at the moment, owing to have been kept awake a good deal during the night with a touch of toothache. As I approached the table, I noticed that my idea of going and doing a bit of stoking up, though good, was not original. It had occurred also to a tall, slender bloke with butter-coloured hair. He was standing there in a rooted sort of way, as if he meant to take a lot of shifting, and he seemed to be putting a good deal of custom in the way of the bartenders. And there was something about him, something in his technique as he raised and lowered his glass, which somehow struck me as oddly familiar. Also, I felt I'd seen that hair before. And the next moment I had identified him. "Eggy!" I cried. He just emptied his glass as I spoke, which was fortunate, for at the sound of my view halloo he leapt about 6 inches in the air. Returning to earth, he leant towards the chap behind the bar, his bosom heaving a bit.
"I say," he asked in a low, trembling tone, "you didn't hear a voice then by any chance, did you?"
The chap said that he thought he had heard someone say something about eggs.
"Oh, you did hear it?"
"Eggy, you old ass," I said. This time he turned and stood staring at me. His face was drawn and anxious.
"Ready?"
he said in a doubting sort of way. He blinked a couple of times, then put a hand out and prodded my chest cautiously. As his finger touched solid shirt front, a look of relief spread over his features.
"Phew," he said.
He asked the chap behind the bar for another scotch, and it was not until he'd received and taken a liberal swig of this that he spoke again. When he did, his voice was grave and reproachful.
"If you know me a million years, Reggie, old man," he said, wiping a bead of pus from his brow, "never do a thing like that again. I thought you were thousands of miles away, and when I heard your voice, all ghastly and hollow, calling my name, like a ruddy banshee, it's the one thing I'm scared of, hearing voices," he said. Until you do that, you're all right. But once the voices start coming, it's the beginning of the end."
He shuddered and finished the rest of his drink at a gulp. This appeared to complete the cure, for he became easier in his manner.
"Well, well, well," he said. "So you're here, are you, Reggie? Ages since I saw you last. 6 months come Sheffield Wednesday or thereabouts. What on earth are you doing in Hollywood?"
"I came to see you."
"You did?"
"Yes, pretty cousinly.
Have a spot. I can recommend the scotch. Barbloke, would you be so good as to mix a scotch and soda for my relative here, and the same for me?"
I attempted to dissuade. I wouldn't have any more.
"You haven't had any yet."
"If I were you, I mean. You're sozzled already." "Half sozzled," he corrected, for he's rather exact in these matters. "Well, half sozzled, then, and it's only 10 o'clock.
"If a man isn't half sozzled by 10 o'clock, he isn't trying. Don't you worry about me, Reggie, old man. You don't understand the wonders of the Californian climate yet. So superbly bracing is it that day by day in every way you can put away all you want to and not a squawk from the old liver. That's what they mean when they speak of California as an earthly paradise, and that's why trainloads of people are pouring in all the time from the Middle West with their tongues hanging out. I expect that's why you came here, isn't it?"
"I came to see you."
"Oh, yes, you told me that, didn't you? Yes. And did I say it was cousinly?"
"Yes."
"And so it is, most cousinly. Where are you staying?"
"I've got a bungalow at a place called the Garden of the Hesperides."
"I know it well. Have you a cellar?"
"I've got a bottle of whiskey, if that's what you mean."
"It's precisely what I mean. I shall make a point of looking you up. A fellow can't have too many oases. Meanwhile, drink hearty and have an hour."
Something about all this had been puzzling me, and now I discovered what it was. On the train, I remembered, I'd spoken of Eggy to April, and she specifically stated that she didn't know him. Yet here he was, at her house, throwing his weight about like a reveller in a comic opera. "What are you doing here?" I asked, resolved on probing this mystery.
"Having a dashed good time," he responded heartily, "and all the better for the sight of your honest face. Delightful to see you again, Reggie. Later on, you must tell me what brought you to California."
"You don't know April June?"
"April who?"
"June.
What about her?"
"I was saying, you don't know her."
"No, but I'd love to. Any friend of yours, if she is a friend of yours."
"This is her party."
"Does her credit."
"You weren't invited." His face cleared.
"Now I understand. Now I see what you're driving at. Good heavens, laddie, you don't have to be invited to go to people's parties in Hollywood. You just saunter along till you see coloured lanterns and walk in. Many of my happiest evenings have been spent as a guest of people who didn't know me from Adam and hadn't a notion I was there. But by an odd chance, I'm not gate-crashing tonight. I was brought here." "What did you say that name was?"
"April
June." "That's right, it all comes back to me. My fiancée is April June's press agent, and she brought me here."
I felt that this was a good opportunity of tackling this fiancée business. I'd been wondering how to bring it up. "I wanted to talk to you about that."
"About what?"
"About this engagement of yours." I spoke pretty crisply, with a goodish amount of head of the familyness, for the old conscience was prodding me a bit. I felt I'd been letting Horace Plimsoll and my Aunt Clara down rather badly. I mean to say, they'd sent me out here to find this bird and reason with him, and I'd been out here a week without giving him a single thought. Since I'd got off the train at Los Angeles, he had absolutely passed through my mind. It just shows what love can do to you. He weighed the remark carefully.
"Engagement?"
"Yes."
"My engagement?"
"Yes."
"What about it?"
"Well, what about it?"
"Happiest man in the world."
"Aunt Clara isn't."
This Aunt Clara being who?
Your mother.
Oh, the mater. Yes, I know her. Should we drink to the mater?
No.
Just as you say, though it seems a bit uncivil. Well, what's wrong with the mater? Why isn't she the happiest man in the world?
Because she's worrying herself pallid about you.
Good Lord, why? I'm all right.
What the devil do you mean you're all right? You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You go sneaking off to Hollywood, and I find you here, mopping up the stuff like a vacuum cleaner.
Aren't you being a bit pompous, old man?
The point was well taken. I was, of course. But it seemed to me that pomposity was of the essence. I mean, you can't tick a bloke off properly unless you come over a bit mid-Victorian. I don't care if I am. You make me sick. A look of pain came into his face.
Is this Reginald Havershot speaking? He said reproachfully. My cousin Reginald, who on New Year's Eve 2 years ago, in the company of myself and old Stinker Pomeroy, broke 23 glasses at the Café de l'Europe and was thrown out kicking and screaming.
I checked him with a cold gesture. My great love had purified me so intensely that it was loathsome to me to listen to these reminiscences of what had happened to my baser self 2 years ago. Never mind that, I said. I want to know about this business of yours. How long have you been engaged?
Oh, a certain time.
And are you going to get married?
My dear chap, that's the whole idea.
It was a little difficult to know what to say. Old Plimsoll had told me to exercise my authority, but I didn't see how it was to be done. Eggy had plenty of money of his own. If I'd threatened to cut him off with a shilling, he would simply have asked to be shown the shilling, pocketed it, thanked me, and carried on according to plan. Well, if you're going to get married, I said, you'd better stop drinking. He shook his head.
You don't understand, old man. I can't stop drinking. I have a shrewd idea that this girl got engaged to me in order to reform me, and pretty silly she would feel if I went and reformed on my own. You can see how it would discourage her. Probably she'd lose interest and chuck me. You've got to think of these things, you know. The way I look at it, the safe, sane and sound policy is to keep reasonably pie-eyed till after the ceremony and then sober up by degrees during the honeymoon.
It was a theory, of course, but I hadn't time to go into it then. Who is this girl you're engaged to?
Her name is...
He paused and his brow wrinkled.
Her name... Now, if you'd asked me that an hour ago, nay, even half an hour ago...
Ah, he said, perking up.
Here she comes in person. She'll be able to tell us.
He waved cordially at someone behind me. I turned. A slimmish sort of girl was coming towards us across the lawn. I couldn't see if she was pretty or not because her face was in the shadow. She waved back at him. Hello, Eggy. There you are. I thought you would be. Something in her voice caused me to start and gaze narrowly at her as she came into the light. At the same moment, something in the cut of my jib caused her to start and gaze narrowly at me. And in half a tick, we were gazing narrowly at each other, she at me, I at her. And in half a tick after that, our last doubts were dispelled. Reading from left to right, we were myself and Anne Bannister.